The damage to the BMW wasn't so bad. Besides the broken windshield, various dents to the bodywork, a single bullet hole in the spare tire mounted on the trunk, and the groove across the passenger side where a ricocheting slug had passed, it was perfectly able to race another day. The damage to the bed in Francisca's studio apartment was more substantial. Sometime during the afternoon storm that swept through, the bed capsized on one side like a freighter struck by a U-boat torpedo, and its occupants, still wrapped up in each other, tumbled off to the floor where they finished what they'd started. They lay on a pile of pillows beneath the window as the afternoon light began to fade. Francisca had her head on his shoulder.
If you give me one more orgasm, you're going to have to take up permanent residence in my pussy.
What more could a man ask for but a warm, snug place to call home?
She began to lick in slow circles around his nipples, her tongue flicking this way and that.
You're tempting fate.
She put her chin on his chest and stared up at him.
Are you married?
An instant after she'd posed the question, she pressed her hand to her mouth.
Oh, my God. Oh, Christ. I didn't mean to ask that. Forget it, all right?
All right.
Oh, that's a stupid question. It's unsophisticated.
It's not unsophisticated to be curious.
Yes, it is.
He could feel her heart beating under his hand. They'd gone to lunch at a small cafe after the incident on the Reichsautobahn, and then Francisca had brought him here to take the photographs. After about half an hour of posing before a Nazi flag tacked to the wall, Michael had had enough of being told what to move and what not to move, especially when Francisca took off her clothes and informed him from behind the chrome-bodied Leica standard that she just needed a few more shots.
When the war's over, it will all have been worth it.
Michael said nothing.
You know what I'm saying. When the trash and the undesirables are removed from society, when Germany takes its rightful place, you know.
Yes.
I've seen some of the sketches for the buildings. Berlin is going to be the most beautiful city in the world. The parks will be majestic. The Reichsautobahn will connect every city in Europe. The trains will be back as they were, but even faster. And the ocean liners will even be bringing American tourists over. And everyone will be flying in their own personal autogyros. You wait and see.
I'm just concerned with the next few months.
Oh, I understand that. You don't have to grasp the big picture right now, but you're going to be part of it. All good Germans will be part of it. Those who fought and died, they'll be part of it too. The war memorials are going to be the envy of the world, showing them all how we stood against the Bolsheviks, how we were the wall they couldn't break through. How we won the battles the British and Americans didn't have the courage to fight. If the Führer says it's so, it will be so.
Yes.
Horst, you're going to live to see all this. God would not let a man like you be lost to the future. I know this like I know my own soul.
She stretched out upon him, her arms going around his body and her ear pressed down as if to count the heartbeats of such a noble beast.
You've seen so much death, I know. I can feel that in you. I think you've known very much pain, but you hide it from the world. You see, we're alike in this way. My parents were too busy for me, too busy adventuring. I was raised by a succession of nannies and thrown out of a succession of schools. I loved a man who died in a racing accident right in front of me. We were going to be married, but, you know, such things happen. I was a girl. I think maybe all of me never came back from that. I'm sorry, I wasn't meaning to talk so much about myself.
I like to listen.
Sometimes I feel as if no one knows me or can ever know me. I feel as if no one hears music as I do, or sees color, or appreciates just living every day. I feel I'm in a world of shadows, and where are the real people? Am I the sleepwalker, or are they? Because if I learned anything from watching Kurt die, it was that one must be prepared to die at any moment. But that doesn't mean being afraid, or locking yourself into a room and sealing off the world. Oh no, it's the opposite. It means going out with courage into what you fear the most and looking at it right in the face. And if you live, you laugh because you have won the fight for another day. That is how you prepare for death, by embracing life, not hiding from it. Listen to me lecturing about life and death to a soldier.
I understand what you mean.
I knew you would. And I knew, the moment you approached me at Herr Rittenkret's party, that you were different. I looked at you and took you in, and I thought, Franziska, you must be with this man. You must not only go to bed with him, but you must be with him. Why? Because I'm a selfish slut dressed up in silks and furs, and I want my pleasure. But also, because to you I want to give pleasure. And I haven't felt that way since I was a girl.
I'm honored.
Her hand slid down between his thighs.
Now, I'm going to get up and go fetch from a drawer a paper pistol target and a floor stand to mount it on. I'm going to set the target up within an interesting distance. Then, I'm going to give you the cock-sucking of your life. And even though you think you might be tired, I'm going to use your gun to hit a bullseye. Do you understand that?
Yes, I very much understand.
There would be no shooting of blanks in this contest. Sometime when the evening had closed in and they had showered together, she remarked on how fast his beard seemed to grow and what kind of razor did he use. He said he owned a French tirzizard, and she gave him an expression of horror and said the beauty of his face should only be trusted to German steel. He wound up shaving with her razor, and afterward he watched as she sat on the edge of the tub and shaved her magnificent legs.
Do you like my bush? It's getting a little full, I think.
He just had to look down at the floor tiles and shake his head at her earthiness.
Dinner? Someplace with music?
Oh, I have an appointment tonight. Something I can't put off. As a matter of fact, I was supposed to call Herr Rittenkret by now. He'll be waiting to hear from me.
She walked in her glorious, lithesome nakedness to the telephone in the other room. Michael hated to play his next card, but it was time to show the Eastern Front Jack of Hearts.
I'm sorry we can't spend all our time together. The time left, I mean.
She put the receiver to her ear and started dialing.
If I get my orders tomorrow, I might not have a chance to see you again.
Franziska Luxa for Herr Rittenkret.
Well, do you have a suggestion for where I should eat?
She gave him a look over her shoulder that in itself was worthy of more target practice.
Oh, hello, Axel. I wanted you to know I'm not feeling very well tonight. We'll need to postpone our plans. What? My condition. My throat is a little sore. Yes, I think I'll feel better tomorrow. Definitely tomorrow. I'll swallow something for it. Yes, I do know. That's right, Major Jaeger is here. I've been taking his pictures this afternoon. Yes, I am aware it's evening, thank you. I'm also aware of that. I'll give him your regards and I'll call you tomorrow. He knows I'm lying, of course. It wouldn't do to lie a second time about your not being here. I am free for dinner after all. And I do know a place with music.
And dancing?
I'll dance you into the ground.
We'll see about that.
Over the next few days, as the air raid siren shrieked at night and bombs fell on Berlin, the parties went on at a pace meant to satisfy all human appetites and destroy all remaining inhibitions. The major with the wary green eyes and the female photojournalist with an interesting reputation were seen in several restaurants, the cinema, and a few nightclubs that still had glass in the windows and not boards. Michael thought that for a person who felt she was known by no one, Franziska had an army of acquaintances. At lunch or dinner, their table was bound to be approached by at least two or three people. Of course, Francisco would introduce him, and because most of these visitors were civilians, Michael would listen politely to their comments about the war being won soon, and Berlin getting back to normal, and the world paying its heavy debt to Germany. Even Francisca, who could herself go on at length about the future of the Thousand-Year Reich, grew bored with the proclamations. Michael didn't fail to notice that several of the married men, their mummified wives in tow, gazed upon Francisca with eyes that had seen, however briefly, what lay beneath the gown and the manners. Their nervous movements from side to side showed they hoped someday to repeat that viewing. She dashed their hopes and broke their hearts with a quick sidelong smile that said,
"Your day is done."
Of more concern to Michael were the officers who occasionally ambled up, their pathetic attempts at charm not quite up to the hard reality of a missing limb. They steered clear of actual war talk, movements of troops and tanks and so forth, but what made Michael dodge a bit were the questions of did he know Colonel von der Glockenspiel or Major Hamnibus or some such name. He always said the name was familiar, but no, he had never met the man. He knew the name of his own supposed divisional commander, Burmeister, so he couldn't be caught in that mistake. The officers always said it was a pleasure, good luck in his forthcoming struggle. Then, when the major and the photojournalist had seen that sharp hunger in the eyes of the other, either he reached for a knee and winnowed his hand beneath her skirt and moved along a silken thigh, or she placed a firm hand of ownership upon what she wished to command. Then one of them would ask the question,
"Are you ready?"
They were always ready. He didn't know exactly what she was doing. Was she gathering information for the Gestapo by seduction, or by following and photographing the comings and goings of suspected inner ring members, or some of both? He didn't think she was doing only mundane investigation. She was far too talented for that. He understood how she operated. Within a few minutes of being with her, a man would cast aside all caution and start to jabber about things to make himself sound important, until a slip of the tongue made her hone in on some remark and work it like she worked between the sheets. If the majority of the Inner Ring's members were office clerks, military aides, pencil pushers, and scientists who might be brilliant but sometimes forgot what shoe went on which foot, Francisca's work was nearly accomplished just by walking into the room. One evening at midweek, before going to a late-night signal party, they went to dinner in one of the very few fine restaurants still open. They sat before a picture window overlooking a lamp-lit park. Their food had just been served. Instantly, the few other patrons started for the cellar.
No.
She was radiant tonight, absolutely gorgeous in a dark blue dress with a strand of pearls around her neck. She took his hand.
We'll be all right.
Then she'd continued eating her dinner and drinking her wine, and at last they were alone in the restaurant. She was staring at him across the table. He had lost his appetite, but he lifted his glass.
Prost!
Prost! I am safe with you, and you are safe with me. As long as we're together, nothing can hurt us.
I'm glad you believe that.
More than believe. I know.
She just smiled. Michael looked at her. Really looked, as if he'd never seen her before. At the birthday party, he'd said something to the Iceman that wasn't exactly true.
I don't fear.
The truth was, he wasn't afraid. He was cautious, and he was prepared. And so he was not afraid. But he feared this woman sitting, smiling before him. The woman whose fingers were entwined with his. He'd had choices presented to him after the mission that involved the D-Day invasion of Normandy and the matter of Iron Fist. Chesna Van Dorn had asked him to go to Hollywood with her. In his mind, he'd weighed that invitation against disappearing into the wilds of Canada, of finding a hunter's stone cabin 300 miles from people and living as a solitary man there until, possibly, the end of his days. His decision had been neither of those. He'd decided to stay where he was, at the house in Wales. To press on, as the British would say. But now he knew he had made a mistake. He should have left Wales. He should have gone where they couldn't find him, where an inquiry for Michael Gallatin drew only a blank stare. He had made a mistake, and now he was in Berlin with bloodthirsty Russians on the doorstep and bombs falling down, and he was holding the hand of Franziska Luxa. Whatever he was not fully one or the other. He could not live in the crowded city of Hollywood, nor could he live 300 miles from the nearest human being. But whatever he was, he realized that he needed the human embrace just as every heart did. And his downfall was that he needed to be the human embrace to some other heart. She was a Nazi, with a Nazi's view of the world. What they had between them was the sex. The deep and hungry kisses, the bites, the cries of passion, the friction of flesh, the movement of hips, and the pounding one into the other until the electric release, and then the wet mouths searching for each other again. They had the sex, and with that, they were very good. Franziska's hand tightened just a little on his own, but her composed expression never changed. Michael feared this woman because she was the river that once crossed would never let him go home again. Moving in slow inches, he began to turn his chair and his body. She would say she needed no protection, and so he didn't ask. He positioned himself so that he was directly across from her, his back offered to the picture window and to the god of war from whom all jagged shards flew. Franziska continued the conversation they'd been having before the sirens about the prospects for German Grand Prix racing to be reinstated after the war and her intention to be part of a team. Michael was more comfortable listening rather than talking to avoid a blunder, though she did encourage him to talk about his childhood and his family. If she only knew the truth, he thought, as he fed her the fiction that had been prepared for him before he'd left England. There were never any more questions about his being married, or about his experience in the war. She never failed, however, to at least once a day ask if he'd gotten his orders yet. Not 90 seconds later, the bomb that Michael was dreading ended its long fall among buildings on the far side of the park. Michael turned in his chair and saw first the crack that had cut diagonally across the window. Secondly, he saw that the park's lamps had been blown out. And thirdly, he saw that a building was burning bright orange with a white center where the bomb had struck.
Someday I'd like to take up sailing.
The manager and the shaken-looking patrons began to emerge from the cellar.
On the open sea. At least try it. How does that sound?
Vet. But with you, an adventure I would not dare miss.
To our vet adventure. Someday. Prost.
The party, held in honor of Signal journalists by some very important backers and supporters of the magazine, was held in a private mansion on the Graberstrasse. The place looked to Michael as if its architect had been a little too fond of gingerbread houses in his childhood, with its walls that resembled thick white frosting, and the roofs, chimneys, and turrets that might have been sprinkled with cinnamon. On their way there, in the open-topped BMW through the wintry night, Franziska had given Michael a brief accounting of who would be in attendance. Baron von Kotteklapp and his fourth wife, the spindly 16-year-old spider girl, Ziggy the playboy, who zigged and zagged both ways, the Countess of No Worth, and so on, plus bodyguards and handholders for all these people, and whoever else had decided to come in search of free champagne and little sausages in sesame seed buns. It was dreadful, but the champagne was good and flowed freely. Michael found himself and Franziska separated soon after they arrived. She whisked away by a spry white-haired man, the Clap, through a larger throng than he would have expected on a bomb-run night. Suddenly, Michael was surrounded by four girls, three of them very attractive indeed, and the fourth, unfortunately, buck-toothed, but who energetically kept wanting to feel his iron cross. But the thing was, he realized, that he was aware of wherever Franziska was among all these grinning and champagne-soused and somewhat sad people in the large, ornately appointed room. He would get a glimpse of her hair or her shoulder or her hip before the crowd closed in, and then he would sense when she was moving and in which direction. He laughed and talked with the ladies, but he was always aware that he was connected to Franziska by what seemed like an elastic band that could stretch to any distance and then draw them together again. The ladies chattered on. Then through the crowd, he saw her standing amid a group of several uniformed men of varying ages, her champagne flute in hand, the men motioning and posturing with the animation of excitement, she calmly sipping her bubbly at the center of what looked like a lot of playboys talking with their groins. A thought came to him, unbidden.
That is my woman.
And as if she'd heard this as clearly as his voice, she looked at him directly across the room, through the puffery of playboys, and over the champagne flute that caught golden firelight from the blaze her right eye quickly winked.
My woman.
Then in the next instant, he had turned away to stride past the girls with the giggles on their lips, to stride past the massive fireplace and the hanging tapestry that depicted a German knight on a white horse. He had to find a place to stand by himself, to think, because he knew exactly what the spikes at the bottom of this particular wolf trap were made of. This was wrong, terribly wrong. And here he paused to pluck a fresh flute of champagne from a waiter's tray. And as he took a drink, he thought it smelled of cigars and a leather saddle. Then the white-clad arm caught him hard by the shoulder, and Michael turned into the mountainous bulk of the white-haired, red-faced man, who also had hold of Francisca's left arm, as one would clutch a troublesome piece of luggage that sprang open at the most inopportune times. Behind Axel Rittenkret stood the thug and the accountant, both in their dark suits.
Major Jaeger, Francisca wishes to say good night, and may we call a cab for you before we leave?
Michael read Francisca's expression. It was more annoyance than pain, but the Gestapo man's fingers were pressing into her flesh.
Take your hand off her.
Rittenkret's pale blue eyes were dead, icy as it were.
It's all right, Horst, I just have to...
Take your hand off her.
Or what, sir? What will you dare to do if I don't take my hand off her?
Michael wasted no time in answering. He flung the remainder of his champagne across the flaming face and the snow-white suit jacket, and from the liquid that streamed down the cheeks and dripped off the chin, he almost expected to hear a sizzle. The accountant, Sigmund, looked worriedly around as if searching for a notepad to write down the details of this atrocity. The thug, Ross, strode toward Michael with a grim purpose, his hands in black leather gloves clenched into fists.
Ross, be still.
The Iceman had taken his hand from Francisca's arm, and he reached with it for the red handkerchief in his jacket. Ross stopped.
Everyone be calm.
He wiped his face and gave a grunt of dismay at the champagne scrawled down the front of his suit. Michael felt Francisca wanting him to look at her, to convey some message, but he would not. He stood loose-limbed and relaxed, ready for whatever happened next.
This is a mess. Major, this tells me you're either insane or you believe yourself to be in love. Which is it?
I don't like to see a woman bullied by a man.
Bullied? Because I was guiding her to the door? Are you sure you know as much about women as you seem to think you do? By the way, are you married?
No.
Ever been married? No children? We need to have a little talk, Major, about the importance of responsibilities. I suggest we go find a quiet room. Everyone, this has been an unfortunate misunderstanding, but everything's fine, believe me.
Michael, Francisca, Rittenkret, and the two underlings went through a door and along a hallway. Rittenkret guided them into a room with a checkerboard patterned floor and some overstuffed chairs. Ross stood at the door. Sigmund wandered around, perhaps estimating how much everything in the room was worth. Rittenkret folded his handkerchief into smaller and smaller squares.
I presume that you're fucking her brains out? You must be, because she's gotten stupid just lately. She was supposed to meet me at headquarters this evening at exactly 6:30. Yet where was she? With you, I'm guessing. This afternoon, she missed another important meeting. Do you know why? Because she called my secretary and said she had to go shopping.
I regret not being available this evening. I had my notes delivered to you.
Oh, yes, your notes. Your journalistic impressions, of course, those. Major, do you have any inkling of what Fräulein Luxe is doing for the Gestapo? Or should I say, for the war effort against traitors unfortunately too close to home?
No.
Good, because it's not your concern. You have your own war to fight. I presume you do. When are your orders coming through?
Any day now, I'm sure. I'm ready to go tonight, if need be.
Are you? Look, Major Jaeger, The problem seems to be that Franziska is neglecting some of her duties to be with you. Now, I don't care if you're fucking her. I myself have fucked her. She has a whole closet full of letters and medals and little pitiful gifts sent to her by men who have fucked her. Well, from all branches of the service, and I think there are even some Boy Scout badges in there somewhere. This is what she does. She's famous for it, sir. Surely you know why by now. Either that or you're dead down there.
Michael was by no means dead down there, but he did feel a little ill when Axel swiveled his cold, dead smile toward Franziska.
She is the perfect package, and her photographic talents aren't so bad either. Working with Signal, she has an open doorway to anywhere she wishes to go, which makes her also valuable to me. But I really don't like it when you send me notes as if I'm not worthy of your time or presence. You have winnowed yourself into a position of responsibility, and I expect you not to falter in your duties. You realize the perks you enjoy aren't free.
I never assumed they were.
Let's put this behind us and focus on our work, all right? The reason I've come here tonight is to tell you that something strange is happening with our list of clients. They are, shall we say, vacating the premises. Therefore, we need to work faster. And by the way, were you going to forget your appointment in a little less than an hour, I believe?
There's not much there.
Michael plastered on a puzzled look that he kept just short of curiosity.
But there is something there. You yourself said so, and I hold you to delivering it. Business, you see, goes on both day and night. Oh, don't look so glum, sir. I'll tell you what. We'll give you a ride. Not far from your hotel is an excellent whorehouse with many beautiful young girls. Some of them are gypsies, if you like the dark look. Very talented in their way. So, if you were hoping for a warm hole tonight, you won't be disappointed.
Michael stared at the floor, somewhere between himself and the white shoes.
I'll just accept the ride to the hotel, if that's what you're offering.
Yes, indeed it is. And Franziska, you should be on your way.
She left without another word. They rode back in a long black Mercedes that displayed small Nazi pennants on aerials mounted above the headlamps. Rittenkret wished him good night in front of the hotel.
You do understand the value of the work that Franziska is doing.
I'm sure it must be valuable.
Oh, yes. And one more thing, Major Jaeger. Please don't try to see her again. It really would interfere, all right? You've crashed my birthday party, made a spectacle of me before some very important people, and taken Franziska's mind off her responsibilities. Now, if I find out that you are seeing her again, I'm going to forget what an excellent soldier for the Reich you've been and escort you through a door you certainly will not want to enter. In that room, there is no cake and ice cream, I can promise you. But I'm sure we won't see each other again. So, once more, I say good luck to you in your future battles, and Heil Hitler.
Michael returned the salute with small enthusiasm. He went to his room, took a cold shower, and stretched out on the bed. The sheets were fresh, but still, her aroma seemed to be everywhere. It permeated and perfumed the air in here. He might have gotten to sleep around midnight.
Hello.
I miss you.
Franziska, come to me.
She arrived within 15 minutes. His heart beat harder when he set his eyes on her. Under her coat, she was wearing the dark blue dress and the strand of pearls around her throat. Within another minute, she was as naked as he was, the expensive coat and dress falling to the floor, the same as if they'd been old rags, her shoes kicked away, her sheer stockings tossed one way and another, her underwear crumpled in elegant folds. She started to remove the pearls, but he caught her fingers.
Leave those on for now.
Her raven black hair was tousled and roughened by the night. Her gray eyes were sparkling and eager, but Michael could see they burned with a lower flame. He could smell the too-sweet cologne of the man she'd slept with, could smell his hair pomade and his bitter sweat. He could smell the cigarette the man had smoked in the aftermath.
I've been with someone.
I know, but you're with me now.
Oh, please, will you hold me?
He guided her the few steps to the bed, and lying down together, he enfolded her, and she pressed her head against his strong shoulder. She went to sleep in that position. He closed his eyes against the blue-shaded lamplight and dozed, opened them, closed them again, felt the full length of her body shift against his, deliciously warm in the sheets, her thighs moving, her lips grazing his cheek, and still she slept.
She trusts me. She trusts the fiction to keep her safe through the night. My God, what am I going to do?
Suddenly he felt her above him, and when he opened his eyes, she was staring at him with her chin supported on her forearm, as if trying to memorize every line, every pore, every newborn beard hair.
I've realized what I can hear in your accent. You speak English.
Speak English? No, I don't.
She frowned. It was a mystery she was trying to solve. Then her frown went away. Up close to his ear, she whispered in English.
I've been waiting for you for a very long time. I didn't think you were ever going to find me. But I'll wait for you still, however long it takes.
With the greatest force of will he'd ever commanded, Michael just gave her a bemused expression and shook his head. Franziska returned to German.
I just said I bought you a present today. It's in my handbag over there. Why don't you go see what it is?
When Michael removed the white-wrapped present with its green bow from the purse, he remembered Rittenkret saying that she had gone shopping that afternoon. She'd gone shopping for a gift for him. He felt he should be pleased, but why did a pine knot seem to be caught in his throat?
Open it, open it!
It was a flawless silver case, and inside he found a shiny new Solingen travel razor, the kind that screws two parts together to make a whole.
It's very handsome. That was kind of you.
I was going to have your initials put on it, but I wasn't sure what type of lettering you'd like. There are too many choices these days. Can we go tomorrow and get it done? I'm free until 2.
Yes, absolutely.
I'll take you to lunch, all right?
He nodded.
I'd like you to use your razor now.
He touched his chin. It was a bit prickly.
Not on you.
She stretched her legs out before her. She wiggled her toes back and forth.
You missed the jar of shaving soap and the scissors in my handbag. Get them. I'll wait.
He got them.
And just what would you like me to shave?
I want a heart, right? Here. Are you up for that?
Michael prepared a warm towel and warmer water in a white bowl. He got the razor rinsed and ready. He got the soap foamy, his cock strained upward, which might be a problem. Michael sat down on the bed between her open thighs to begin this heroic endeavor by shaping the heart with the scissors.
We're just using the soap cream right now. Go ahead. My life is in your hands.
He did a good job, an excellent job, a slow, careful job. If a razor could speak, it would babble happily for the rest of its days. Then it was done, and she gazed down upon the result, and then looked at him with what he thought might be stars in her eyes.
Now I can say that both my hearts belong to Horst Jaeger.
He put the razor and the scissors and the soap and the bowl aside, and he grasped a handful of her hair to rock her head back, and even as his mouth pressed forward, hers opened to accept him, and her tongue was formed of flame. For the next hour, he devastated her. He took her to the edge and brought her back so many times, she became a trembling, moaning, half-sobbing pulse of nerves, vibrating with need and shining with sweat. He plunged into her full length, at full power, and then he pulled out and balanced above her, the very tip of him making slow circles in the foldings of her new heart. Again and again he moved upon her, into her, and within her. She tensed so hard, Michael thought he could feel every muscle in her body move beneath the flesh like bundles of piano wire. It went on, and then the flash seared through his own body, and as he slid out of her, he felt the flood of her liquid explosion. She turned over atop him and pushed him back in with one hand and clamped herself around him like a hot, soaking wet vice. They stayed that way. She tried to lift her head, tried to speak.
Oh my God. Oh my God.
When he slid out of her again, Franziska tried in vain to hold him, but she too was as weak as yesterday's pudding. With an effort, her head came up, and she looked at him through glazed eyes.
I think you've broken me. I'm in pieces.
Don't worry. I'll put you back together again.
The future arrived around 3 o'clock the following afternoon. Berlin wore a crust of snow. The future arrived as Michael, after returning from lunch with Franziska, was having a quick touch-up shave with the happiest razor in the world. On the silver case were the freshly tooled letters H and J, as simple as possible. The future did not arrive with Russians smashing into the city. It did not arrive with Gestapo agents in black leather coats swarming out of cars and bounding up the stairs to room 214 with their Lugers drawn. It did not arrive with the falling of more bombs, or with train-killing Mustangs pumping rockets into buildings that were old when Beethoven's fate first knocked at the door. It arrived with a telephone call to his room.
Yes?
Excuse me, sir. A priest by the name of Father Herbert Kohlmann wishes to speak to Major Jaeger in the lobby as soon as possible.
I'll be down in a few minutes.
Now, this was puzzling. There was no need for alarm, but still, if this was someone from his side, what was the reason for contact? But of course, he was being contacted to end the mission. It was all over. They must have gotten enough of the inner ring out that a week's stay in this devil's playground was no longer required. He could get to the safe house and cross the river and go home. Walk out of this hotel in the company of a priest and never see Franziska again. And leave her to what he knew was coming in a month, three at the most. The Russians were set on vengeance for what the Germans had done to their countrymen beginning in 41. The murders, atrocities, and rapes were going to be returned 100-fold. The priest was sitting in a black leather chair in the far corner of a lobby that maintained, in spite of all realities, its opulent faux medieval charm. Flames crackled in the gray stone hearth, which was decorated with carvings of the faces of various knights and noblemen. Flags of many family crests were on display, all surrounding a huge Nazi banner. It was fitting, Michael thought as he crossed the gold-colored carpet, that the priest be waiting for him under a tapestry that depicted a medieval wolf hunt, with men on horseback plunging their spears into the doomed and bloody beast.
Major Jaeger.
Father Kohlmann, is it?
It is. Please, sit.
Kohlmann sat down and, smiling faintly, seemed to be carefully examining the major. Michael had already taken the priest in, tall and slender, about 45, with light brown hair showing hints of gray here and there, a sharp nose, a long chin, a pair of horn-rimmed glasses with blue-tinted lenses that made it difficult to see his eyes. Slim-fingered hands with manicured nails, a bit vain for a priest. The smell of soap or aftershave that had a little too much top note of Paris perfume, and the odor of a drink or two in the early afternoon.
We're all hoping for an early spring.
I can't recall a colder winter.
But my dog certainly enjoyed it.
What kind of dog?
Just a mutt.
Michael nodded. He removed his cap and stared up at the tapestry.
The situation is evolving well.
The movement of his head tracked a few people crossing the lobby. An older man and woman were seated on a sofa at a comfortable distance away. The woman's face bowed. The man was talking quietly to her.
Evolving well.
Glad to hear.
The priest steepled his long fingers. He stared into space. Communing with God, Michael wondered. Hearing some voice from the divine infinite?
There's been an alteration.
Michael waited. He was tense. Alteration, a tailor's term. The taking in or letting out of clothes by nimble needles.
We want the woman removed.
Removed? You mean taken somewhere?
You know what I mean.
No, I do not. No, I do not.
The decision has been made to remove her.
We want to make a statement.
Michael almost lost everything he'd built into himself over the hardship and experience of his years. His self-control, the pushing down and down and down of his own desires of the heart, the grimness of the morning before dawn when the wolves call and no human is there in bed to make you want to stay, to make you need to stay. He almost lost it all because the bones seemed to start to reshape in his face before he caught himself, and the blood roared within him, and the scent of the wildness that was his deepest essence bloomed from his flesh.
A statement. A statement of what? That we can kill women just as easily as they can? Calm down, Major.
Michael's joints were sore. All his bones had threatened, in the briefest of seconds, to rearrange themselves. Across the back of his neck, against the collar, he felt the scurryings of small, coarse black and gray hairs rising and falling like strange tides. Only he knew what they were, and only he knew how much he wanted to kill the priest for even daring to make this suggestion. Coleman, his eyes hidden behind the blue lenses, reached into the pocket of his immaculate coat, and the fingers with their manicured nails returned with a small packet of black licorice sticks. He took one, slid it into a corner of his mouth, and offered the pack to Michael.
No, thank you. I'm not a drunkard, so I don't need that to hide the smell of my breath.
Coleman sat very still for a few seconds. His face was blank. He returned the pack of licorice to his pocket.
The alteration does not come from me. I'm the messenger, but I am told to tell you that you should not blame our mutual friend for the disaster at Arnhem. And you should not blame him for this.
I'll blame whoever I fucking choose to blame.
We need to make a statement, not to the Germans, but to the Russians. They have spies here watching. They want to see how we handle ourselves in matters like this for future reference. We have to be as ruthless as they are, Major. Otherwise, they'll walk all over us when they take the world stage, and believe me, then they seize Berlin, which they will. They will claim a large piece of Europe. So the woman needs to be removed as a statement of what we will not tolerate.
Fun woman.
No, she's not the only one, of course not. But she's the one you're being ordered to remove.
Why? Because I've gotten close to her.
Exactly.
Michael was sweating. It was oozing out of him. He could smell the sourness of himself. He put a trembling hand to his forehead.
Are you going to be ill?
Do you believe in hell?
Certainly I do.
You're a damned liar. Because if you believed in hell, you would be getting out of that chair and running for your life.
The fingers steepled again.
I see. We have a complication.
Michael stared at the floor as that ridiculous, hollow word clanged in his mind.
I remind you, Major, that this woman has been instrumental in the brutal murders of many German patriots, of many fine men, women, and children. Because you must realize entire families have been destroyed in this, just disappeared, without a trace. But certainly we know they were taken first to Gestapo headquarters. And some of those people, those patriots who risked everything to save this country from its self-mutilation, its sheer drum-beating insanity, were my friends. Now, I suspect bones and ashes in a garbage pit somewhere. Before we go any further with this, shall I supply for you a list of their names and a display of their photographs? I can show you some grand pictures of the children, all dressed in their nice clothes and smiling. You know, there's nothing quite like a child's smile.
Michael kept his head lowered.
They are the future, children are. Such potential to make things brighter in this unhappy world. But things do get complicated. Sometimes, very often it seems, in this day and age, the dark and the light get all mixed up together. And there are intelligent men who count on that happening. They are educated to make that happen. It is their most profound desire to do so. Now, I can sit here and say that possibly this woman fell under the influence of such a man. That, finding herself surrounded by fellow Germans who bore a grudge against the world and heeded the stirring call of a madman, She felt a swell of what she took to be true and versy patriotism. Well, he said it. If you don't follow me, you don't love Germany. And he's a fantastic speaker who can make some very convincing arguments. But one can call murder a process of cleansing and eradication of the unfit and the preparation for a thousand-year Reich. It's still murder, even in the language of the lawyer and the politician. She's one of the people who must pay for that murder. Not just of the other human beings, but of the country I knew. Because, Major Jaeger, my land has been burned away. I'm just trying my best to save a few seeds to throw on the scorched earth, in hopes anything can ever grow here again. So, you see, I do believe in hell. I live there.
Michael put his hands to his face.
Is there any other way?
You don't have to do it. A mutual friend suggested it be offered first to you. If you refuse, you can go with me right now to the safe house. We'll get you out as soon as possible.
But she'll still be killed.
Yes. We have people with experience.
How would it be done?
A knock at the door of her studio late at night. A silenced bullet to the head. Or someone following her to strangle her with a wire garrote wrapped around her neck. It would be quick.
Oh, Jesus. I suppose one can also call murder a just retaliation for past sins.
I didn't always need the licorice for my breath, Major.
The future had come. Michael knew it. And this future was more terrible than he ever might have conceived. The fighter pilots couldn't kill a woman because they left that hideous job to the slime on the ground. The shadow men. And him, the most shadowy of all.
Can't I get her out? Knock her over the head, use chloroform or something. Can't I just get her out and call it done?
Too risky. And in the scheme of things, she's more valuable to us dead than alive.
It took Michael Gallatin a while to get the words from brain to mouth and out.
If I were to do it, how would I?
You're the killer.
Michael closed his eyes. But when he opened them again, he was still sitting in a black leather chair in the lobby of the Grand Frederick in the presence of this priest, and there was still a task to be done.
Yes. I am the killer. Yes, I am. So, I presume you have a chemist?
Yes.
I want a pill. Something that dissolves quickly. Something that is tasteless and odorless. Something that will put her to sleep within 15 or 20 minutes. That's what I want. That she just go to sleep.
It's a tall order.
Yes, it is, but I'm the killer. And I'm telling you, as the killer, that if she feels pain, that if she throws up her guts or defecates herself or anything other than going to sleep, then I'm coming after the messenger. And the messenger may think he's so righteous and pure for his glorious love of what Germany once was. But it's all murder to me because I'm the killer. If the messenger tries to hide in his house, I'll tear it to pieces. And if he tries to hide in his church, I'll take that apart too. And maybe I'll never leave this city alive. But after she's dead, and I've ripped you to shreds, I will have no more need to live another day. Because the killer's work will be finished.
It took a moment for Coleman to relax. He must have truly been close to God, because he asked,
Shall I bring you two pills, then?
Michael had already thought about that. As much as he might wish it, suicide was repugnant to him. The wolf in him wouldn't allow it.
Only the one.
The priest stood up and so did Michael.
They'll come up with something. Still, there won't be an opportunity to test its qualities. It'll have to be guesswork.
Prayer might help.
Michael went out for a walk to clear his head and ended up back at his hotel lobby that evening. The clerk gave him a message from Francisca. She had a dinner engagement she couldn't get out of, and then she had to do some photographic work in her darkroom. But she would call at 11 o'clock. The clerk read the last lines of the message.
Think of me when you have dinner. 1,000 kisses. Weather forecast? More rain coming?
The clerk looked strangely at the major, as if he suspected this must be some kind of secret code. Michael took the paper and had dinner in the restaurant, followed by a good strong glass of brandy. He wound up paying for an entire bottle, which he took with a glass up to his room. He was waiting, half drunk, when the telephone rang at 10:56.
I have to work a little later. Some more pictures to develop, and they must be done tonight.
By order of a written cut.
You don't sound like yourself. Are you all right?
I've had dinner, and I've been drinking.
You've been drinking?
Yes. Brandy. I'm looking at what is almost an empty bottle. I expect it to be empty in the next, 10 minutes.
Your orders came.
Yes.
Oh, Horst, I'll be right there.
No, Francisca. Finish what you're doing.
I'm leaving now. This can wait.
Listen to me. Just stay here and do what you need to do. Keep your mind on your work.
Oh, of course.
I mean it. Francisca, I don't have to leave tonight. Nor tomorrow.
And you have to go then?
We still have time enough. I promise.
There can't be enough time.
Go back to your work.
I'll be there as soon as I finish.
Michael looked at the clock. It was 12:40.
I know men who can help. They can have you reassigned to duty here. All I have to do is...
He knew what she would have to do. He took her chin in his hand and glared into her luminous eyes.
No. You're not doing that for me. Do you hear? Not for me.
He saw the pain in her face, and it nearly dropped him to his knees. He tried to pull a smile up from somewhere.
There's no need for sadness. Didn't you say to me that this is my purpose? And you know fully well you said that God would not allow a man like me to...
That was before.
Before what? We went to bed together?
No, before I wanted you to stay with me. I know forever is a long time, so I won't say forever, but we could start out by saying it might be forever, couldn't we? Please, 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 please.
It was she who got down on her knees. She grasped his hand and held it against a tear-wet cheek.
Please, I can take care of this. I can go see those men. It would be nothing. It would be so easy. I could...
Stand up! Come on, up!
He pulled her to her feet.
Don't beg. Never beg. Not to any man.
I don't want you to die.
Get out of here, he almost said. He thought for a few seconds of shouting at her, of running her out, because this was too much. It was impossible to bear this. But the fact was, he knew how short their hours were. And if she had to die, if she had to die, then he would be with her when it happened. And it would not be a cold stranger with a silenced pistol or a strangler in the alley at the end of the street. He would take the responsibility to put her over as gently as possible. And then, quite suddenly, he felt the burn in his own eyes, and he lowered his head, but she'd already seen. She put a finger under his chin to angle his face toward her again.
I'm not going to let you be lost.
I have lied to you. My Westphalian accent is false, studied. I was not born in Dortmund. I am different from anyone else. I was born in Russia, and I was a child there. What you're hearing in my accent is...
Shh, I don't care. Just answer me this. You're not a traitor, are you?
No, I'm not a traitor.
Then what does it matter? Very well, so you were born in Russia. What were you, the family secret? If you looked into the histories of most of the people at that signal party, you'd find few of them without a chambermaid or a stable boy hidden in their family trees.
The power of illusion, or delusion. Right now, she was creating the story in her mind of how he was the child of an ill-starred love between a German officer and a Russian maiden on the eve of the Great War, and how he'd probably been raised by the simple and gentle maiden, But then she'd sent him to be cared for by his father in Dortmund because she knew what better education and enlightenment he would receive. In fact, that sounded close to the movie they'd seen at the cinema a few nights ago. What was the point of going down the road of truth? It was too fantastic to be believed. And if he showed her, what then? She might die of fright, and then he could go home like a real hero. He put his arms around her and held her tightly. They clung together like the only still solid objects in a universe disintegrating to dust.
I'm so sorry.
Sorry, he realized, that he had not been born in England, that they had not met years before this one, that even together they stood on different sides of a chasm. Sorry that life was as cruel as it was, and that time could never be stopped or wound backward.
It wasn't a bad lie. I forgive you.
She took her clothes off and pressed her breasts against his chest. She ground her second heart against his groin in slow circles while she stared pleadingly into his eyes. But he could not be roused.
Are you tired of me?
No. It's not that.
As Michael sat on the edge of the bed, Franziska knelt behind him and worked the tense muscles of his shoulders with her strong fingers.
I'll do anything you like. I'm the 10th woman.
The 10th woman?
Oh, yes. Don't you know? 5 women out of 10 will slap a man's face for an indecent suggestion. 2 will turn on the heel. 1 will kick him in the balls, and 1 will think it over. I'm the 10th woman.
He smiled slightly in spite of himself.
I'm the woman who refused to leave the Garden of Eden. I bake pies from the forbidden fruit, and I serve them to whomever I choose.
Sounds delicious.
Do you think I'm a bad person? Do you think I'm...
He knew what she was really asking.
How do you feel about me?
He turned toward her, and it hit him anew how beautiful she was. She was to him like a masterpiece of a painting, a work of art that comes together in its perfection only once in the proverbial blue moon, and always in her face there was some shade or nuance of expression that changed it ever so slightly, so that looking at her was like seeing not one woman, but a multitude. And all of them, every one, were now staring at him with this question in the perfume-scented air between them. He was going to show her how he felt. No matter what tomorrow held. She wanted to know, and words were not enough. So he would lay her down upon the bed and show her, with all his strength and tenderness and desire, because she deserved to know, and he owed her that much. Then he would make her promise on both her hearts that she would do nothing to interfere with his orders, and he would tell her that tomorrow night he intended to take her to dinner and to a place where music played until very late, and afterward, he wanted her right where she belonged, here in bed with him, tasting the forbidden fruit. And champagne, he would say. Of course they needed champagne to drink on the last night of their world. She wrapped herself around him as he entered her.
Oh, Horst!
It was the name of a stranger. A bad part of the morning was when Michael, returning from a walk, asked at the desk if anything had arrived for Major Horst Jaeger.
Yes, Major. This came while you were out.
The clerk brought from beneath the smooth oak counter a small box wrapped in brown paper. Michael noted at once that it was about the size of a jeweler's box, the kind that might hold a...
If you don't mind my asking, I've seen you several times in the company of the beautiful young woman. Would this be a ring for her, sir?
Michael knew what the man surmised. Lovers being parted, the noble soldier of the Reich going off to war. Was this an engagement gift, perhaps? A promise of many bright tomorrows?
I need a magnum of chilled champagne in my room around midnight. 2 glasses. I like the best bottle in the house.
Yes, sir. I believe we have some Moët still in stock.
That'll do. Bill my account, of course.
My compliments and congratulations, sir.
In his room, Michael opened the box and unwrapped a small ball of waxed paper sealed with tape. The pill was white with a faint blue tinge, the same color and a little smaller than one of Franziska's pearls. He returned it to the waxed paper and then to the box, which went up on the closet shelf behind the folded extra blanket. For most of the day he slept, or tried to, he curled himself against the gray light that fell through the windows. Snowflakes spun against the glass. Just after 3, she called to say she would be there in front at 6:30. Their dinner reservation, more romantic than necessary, was for 7 o'clock.
Oh, darling, I'm so happy.
When he hung up, he was planning the evening.
Yes. I am the killer.
He showered and shaved and dressed well in advance of her arrival. He used a German military-issue brush on his hair and a German military-issue toothbrush on his teeth. He took the taped-up ball of waxed paper from its box and put it into his trouser pocket on the left side. He wasn't sure yet how or when he was going to drop the pill in her glass, but he had the confidence of the professional.
He's a killer. Yes, I am.
Dark was falling very quickly. He went downstairs to meet her, and pulling the collar of his Feldgrau topcoat up, he walked into the flurries and waited. The BMW came, its top raised and secured with grommets against the weather. They ate at a restaurant that overlooked the River Spree. It was all candles and dark red drapes. Michael had to move his chair a little, because from where he was sitting, the view out the terrace windows to the east showed him the occasional dim flare of an artillery shell against low-lying clouds. Franziska played hands with him atop the table and rubbed his ankle with her foot beneath it. She ate her first course of rose-hip soup and potato salad like there was no tomorrow. When his meal, the grilled venison, came, he moved it around the plate for show, but found he had no stomach for it. Still, he had to pick himself up for her. He had to chat and listen and nod and to give her a smile when she needed or expected one. And she had chosen this night to reveal to him the full power of her gifts, for not only was she streamlined and sleek as a racing machine in her black dress trimmed with silver spangles, and not only were the waves of black hair pinned back with a silver clasp in the shape of a half moon, and not only did her wine-red lips shine and her gray eyes gleam in the low light, but her force of life was focused on him as if he were the only other human being in the world. Whenever he spoke about the most inane thing, the weather, the service at the hotel, what he'd seen on his walk today, seemed to her rapt attention to be the most heartfelt confession of a god. This was how she worked. This was how the family man or the office worker or the lowly aide tripped over his tongue in his eagerness to be heard and appreciated, to be thought so important by a beautiful creature. This was how the secrets became known. Not by being pried out, but by being urged out word after word with silent approval. Then the Gestapo came and took the crowing, pitiful roosters to hell to be boiled down into oil for the potato salad.
Yes, I am the killer.
You look so worried. You don't need to be.
It's not worry. I'm just preparing myself in my mind.
I know that you want to do your duty. I know you're a warrior. What would you be if you weren't an office boy? And not some general staff monkey, either. You are what you are, and I thank God for that. But you're also only a man, Horst. The same flesh and blood and worries of any man. It is the woman who shoulders the burden her man can't carry. This woman wants to, very badly. So, if you need to talk about the war or anything else that troubles you, please, I'm right here.
Michael picked up his fork and drew furrows in the white tablecloth. This was her power, because everything in him wanted to say,
yes, I am the killer, but I want to be your man. I want to start clean and tell you my story. I want to tell you how I was born both times and how I have lived. I want to tell you about my first bitch and my missing son. About the world as I know it, and the world as I wish it to be. I want to tell you how the old tales of the lycanthrope are wrong, and how they are right. And I want to be able to tell all this to you, and afterwards look into your eyes and see not fear, but love.
But he didn't say any of this, because there was no time, and the pill was in his pocket. And if he was indeed her man, he would not ask her to shoulder any burdens he couldn't carry alone.
It's going to be all right. You'll see.
Then it was time to go back to the hotel, back to room 214, because there was nowhere else to go.